When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Mark Boris and this is Straight Talk.
I've never said this publicly, but
what you've experienced in your life, I mean, obviously you've been punished. Do you have regrets about it, or do you just fuck it, just move on?
What happened with me, say 2018, I had a lot of people calling me names. But at the end of the day, for me, it's about how can I get better from that situation? And it's a mindset thing. It stems from how I grew up.
Tell me about Dave Warner, the young kid. Like, where'd you live? Where'd you grow up?
For us, we lived in like a townhouse. There was a lot of stuff going on in that area. There was domestic violence. There was drug abuse. There was, you know, people coming out of prison. And, you know, we had a great upbringing. But it was, how did you learn to survive there?
How did Dave Warner become a cricketer?
When I look back, my brother, who was 7 years older than me, throwing balls against the wall and hitting them and playing cricket with each other, that's where the hard work started. What do you want to be remembered for? Do you want to play cricket for Australia? You want the bag of green? You've got to work hard. You know, only 11 players can take that field.
Dave Warner, welcome to Straight Talk, mate.
Thank you.
My God, I'm really happy you're here, and I'm actually, to be frank with you, I'm actually thrilled that if I could just take away Dave Warner the bloke and talk about Dave Warner the celebrity and the legend, I'm thrilled with the celebrity and the legend dude sitting right opposite me. I know Dave Warner is a much more humble person than that, and we'll talk about that in a moment, but I'm actually thrilled that I got that dude in front of me today. Thanks very much for coming in, mate.
No, I appreciate it.
So, I should give you an update, one. You know, you probably heard last night, and I don't know when this is going to go to air, but our mate Spencer, our new recruit, got 8 weeks. We're pretty knocked about that because, you know, I can tell you now, I've spoken, he's not a racist, but pretty tricky, the world of sport, and you come from that world. What is right? What is considered to be ethically right? What is the current narrative? How people get punished? And when do they seek out to the administration, seek out to sort of not make an example of somebody, but prove to the public that supports them that they are doing the, let's call it, the right thing? So I wasn't surprised with the Spencer Lenu, the number of weeks he got, 8 weeks. I'm not surprised. What do you think about that in terms of what you've experienced in your life? I mean, obviously you've been punished, about over the top stuff. Do you have regrets about it, or do you just fuck it, just move on?
Yeah, look, it's a complex situation with today, in general, with everything. So I think the main focus is being educated.
That's a good
with
point.
Everything. So if you're educated in the process that's there, they facilitate that, you got to take all that on board, and then there's no excuses.
Whose responsibility, though, is to use just, that's a good point.
Yeah.
Whose responsibility is it, for example, in relation to, let's pick on racism for the moment, in rugby league or in sport generally, but rugby league, whose responsibility is to build the education process? In other words, how is it, I'm not asking you to build out the protocol, but how is it supposed to be taught to these young guys? Because the young guys,
yep,
they might not know calling someone a monkey is actually racist. Literally might not know that. We might assume they should know. How's that education process, and in particular in relation to what you got charged with, how's that education thing rolled out, and whose responsibility is it for? Is that for?
I think it goes back to the first part there, Mark, is about how you grow up as well. So you might have mates that feel like you can call each other whatever you want. But then when you move out of sort of that phase of your mates and then you're on the field and you're playing against people that you don't know, you probably can't make comment about certain things like that. And I think the education process stems with, for us, it's Cricket Australia. They put the rules and regulations in place. You get educated on these topics. But then it's upon yourself is a responsibility of what am I as a person? What language do I choose to use against people? And you have to be mindful. You have to be very mindful to bite your tongue around a lot of issues. It's not just racism. It's everything as a whole with the world that we're living in today. And, you know, you go back to your last point there about what happened with me, say 2018. I had a lot of people calling me names. I had a lot of people calling me everything. But at the end of the day, for me, it's about how can I get better from that situation? How do I turn the tables on? I'm not that person. I'm actually a very generous person, a very kind person, and I've got three beautiful kids and a beautiful wife. Now, how can I move forward from this situation? And it's a mindset thing. And I think for me, it's about how I grew up, and it stems from there. And that's always stuck with me in the back of my mind. So to educate others, I think it's a responsibility of each individual, to be brutally honest.
So that's very interesting. So that's a fairly mature point of view. And maturity is a sort of correlated to age and experiences and a lot of other things. And also who's in your corner,
yep.
Who's talking to you, you know, managers and yep. parents and brothers and sisters and that sort of stuff. And you said that's sort of how you grew up. Can I go back to that? So tell me about Dave Warner, the young kid. Like, where'd you live? Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? Brothers and sisters, what's the deal?
Yeah, look, I grew up in Matraville, suburb here in the eastern suburbs. A lot of housing commission.
South claim it for themselves, mate.
They claim me, that's for sure. but no, we grew up in housing commission. There was a lot of housing commission opportunities around us. I have an older brother, 7 years, Stephen, my mum and dad, Lorraine, and Howard. So for us, we lived in like a townhouse, but that townhouse had 39 other townhouses with us, and it was a community. And it was so different. Like, we were very family orientated. There's probably another 5 or 6 so families that were very family orientated. Then the others there was domestic violence. There was drug abuse. There was, people coming out of prison. There was a lot of stuff going on in that area. But then on the other side, you have multi-million dollar houses.
Yeah.
So as a kid, you're growing up in the townhouses and, you know, we had a great upbringing, but it was, how did you learn to survive there?
Yeah, well, how did you learn to survive?
Well, I had a few guys that were in sort of my corner that were my mates into other different things, which, you know, I could have went down that way and would have ended up behind bars. But in saying that, that was early doors. That was like 12, 13, 14 years of age. But I have so much respect for my parents, and so did these guys. And they were older than me. They were probably 4 or 5 years older than me. They had a lot of respect for my parents. Never, ever looked to engage me with anything that they were doing. And I appreciated that in the day. But then when you get a little bit old and you're thinking, gee, these guys are getting cash and all this kind of stuff, and I'm busting my ass. I was doing the paper run. I was doing-
You're the actual paper boy?
The paper boy.
With the whistle?
Yep.
Up and down the street.
Yep, I was that annoying little boy. Yeah, I remember that. No, actually,
they're pretty good Sunday morning.
And, you know, you have to start somewhere. But that goes back to building like a relationship as well. I worked at Woolworths packing shelves up until I was 21. And then from there, it was more about my circle of friends. Now, how do I've met new people in my life, people that are on the straight and narrow. Do you leave behind them or do you still keep in touch? I was always in touch with these guys, still when I played for Australia. And then it sort of from there was all almost like a perception, or his mates are here and his mates are there. And that's where the switch sort of turned for me when I was about 27, 28. And my circle of friends condensed quite a lot. And that was more sometimes on their behalf. They said it was probably the better option. And from my point of view, and for what I wanted to do in my life. And they always knew I was going to be a cricket player. And I always wanted to do that. So that's always sat with me. I keep in touch here and there. But where I am today, my circle of friends have come down significantly.
In terms of numbers, because you can't be friends with everybody because it takes a lot to keep all the relationships going. Just like literally turning up for a beer or a lunch or whatever the case may be, or just keeping in contact with people, especially in your case, as you broaden, people are sort of probably trying to attach themselves to you all the time for something, and it might be for your benefit. Can I just peel back a little bit though? That level of maturity or that level of understanding of relationships, did your mum used to tell you this or your dad used to tell you this? And what were the circumstances, if you don't mind sharing with us, were the circumstances by which you guys found yourselves in the Housing Commission?
It was more around mum and dad's income at the stage. Dad was in sales, did it for a long time. But in general, they couldn't afford to buy a house or to rent. So we managed to get government assistance and rent off the government, which Housing Commission is. And my mum, you know, she's just such a special human being. She was an aged care nurse for 30, 35 years. And we all know the wages in that are very, very minimal. And at that stage, they were really low. But my mum never complained once about her wages, never complained about anything, always had a smile on her face. Came home, made our dinner. We obviously had to help around the house with our washing and all that stuff, and specifically playing cricket in whites. But she only just recently retired and she's very, very happy. And the happiest part of my moment was to get my mum and dad out of Housing Commission. And that was always stuck in the back of my mind, was to work hard. And if I'm going to work as hard as I can and I come into money, that was the most important thing to me.
So they're both alive still?
Yeah, they are. Yep.
They're still together?
Yep. They're still together. And, they live in Matraville.
And you bought them a house of matter?
I bought them a unit. Bought them a unit, 2010, 11, I think it might have been. Bought that off the plan. And then I think they moved into 13 to 14.
And if you, I don't know if you've ever had the opportunity, but like, let's say we've got the opportunity now, because there'll be a couple hundred thousand people listening to this, easy. Want to give them a shout out? What would you say to them? What would you say to your mum and dad?
Oh, that I love them. I think what's important, as you were just elaborating before about getting older, just hug your parents, because you just don't know when the day's going to go.
Yeah.
And, you know, my parents are 70 and 68, and you got to cherish these moments. I'm busy. The last 15 years been traveling on the road all the time, constantly coming home, and as you said, trying to catch up with people. I try my best to catch up with my parents quite a bit, my brother, but life takes you on different journeys, right? So we're time poor, but you should be able to always make time for your parents. That's important.
That's pretty cool. Because now you're a parent. Obviously, you've got your own brood, and you've got your lovely wife, Candace. And I'll talk about that in a moment. But I'm actually curious, during that whole conversation then, you never mentioned cricket. You just mentioned your whites. How did Dave Warner become a cricketer, or what's the deal around there? I know you love your rugby league, and we should put it out there straight up. He is a Roosters diehard. Even though he grew up in Matraville, he's a Roosters diehard. That's it. Where'd you go to school?
Matraville Public and then Ramwick Boys.
Ramwick Boys, okay. Well, there's a dispute over the territory.
Yep.
But, you know, we'll take it at this stage. We'll take him as a Rooster. But how did you become a mad – talking in terms of skill, but a mad cricketer. What was the influence there?
I think when I look back, my brother, who was 7 years older than me, played with Arslan Khawaja, who is Usman Khawaja's brother. And we both were just like playing up a wave of the oval, throwing balls against the wall and hitting them and playing cricket with each other. And I think it stems from there. I think having a brother that's older than you on that path of trying to play cricket professionally, you learn a lot. And I think because he is 7 years older than me, I learned a lot. And it wasn't just cricket ability. He had the gift and the talent.
Your brother?
My brother. It was just more, I think, for him, that next level. We talk about maturity. We talk about in between your ears, which is your head, making sure your mind's in it. If your mind's not in it, you get distracted. And then that deters you away from your talent and your gift, and that's playing cricket. And I think he at some stage sort of flicked the switch around 22, 23 and went into sort of apprenticeships. And I think he found ease with that. He did come through a generation of you know, Stuart Clarke, Michael Slater, Corey Richards, a few other guys, the Ward brothers. So he had quite a tough task ahead of him to try and sort of get into that sort of New South Wales setup. And for me, it was just about trying to ride his journey as well for him. And, yeah, so happened to be. I played down at East Cricket Club, which was Waverley at that time.
Was it Greg Matthews around
there? Yep, Greg Matthews. I played my first third grade game with him at 16, I think. It was a different experience, I must say.
Mo, definitely a different experience. But we love him.
We love him. But yeah, from 16 years of age, I got my first great opportunity. Played with a few guys, Mark Patterson, Adrian Tucker.
Paddo
was my first captain.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was. I played with some really cool men. And when I say men, that's where we are today in our sport, where you got a lot of kids coming through.
Because Pat would be 20 years, more than 20 years old.
He would have been 35, 36 at that time, just coming back from New South Wales state stuff. But what that says to me is that we don't have enough time to come back and play great cricket anymore. But that's where you grow as a kid. You grow with playing with men. You know, at the moment, you got all these different sports, a lot of kids coming through. But that's why you got to hold on to the experience. And the experienced guys like myself, whether it's cricket, rugby, rugby league, AFL, we need to hang on to try and teach these kids that it's not easy. You have to put in hard work. And from when I was 8, 9 years of age watching my brother, that's where the hard work started.
Was it hard work in the sense that it was grueling, or was it hard work in the sense that you had to be committed?
You had to be committed, but the best thing for me was I was just having fun.
Yeah.
And I still today, go to get my game of cricket thinking I'm playing with my mates. That's all it is. It's not a job. It's there, I'm having fun. My job now is being a dad and being a husband. That's my job now.
That's pretty cool.
So that's how I've always seen cricket. I've always seen cricket as I'm still going to go have a beer. I'm still going to go out for dinner. I don't care if it's day two of a test match. I'm still going to do these things because I'm still living. I've got to live my life.
Yeah.
And that's how I've always seen my life from a kid growing up. I've not really cared about anyone's opinion. I don't care what people think or say. I'm about me and doing what I can do best. And that's what I have to do for my family and me.
So can I ask you a question then? And you probably know this from East, but like, you know, our coach Robbo, like, and previous coach said, they know they're going to play opposition, and they do a fair bit of analytics on who they're playing against. And in your case, it's probably even more focused because you know who you're going to be batting against, for example.
Yep. Months out.
Yeah. Do you not obsess, but do you get into the detail? So I'm going to be facing up against so and so. I know what he does when he throws the ball, and then do you then go off and practice in the nets or somewhere defending or attacking that particular type of style of bowling? I mean, is it like the fights, like styles win fights? Is it like that when it comes to cricket for a batsman facing a bowler? Bowling styles win the day? How does it work?
Two guys specifically would be Marnus Labuschagne and Steve Smith. They're constantly looking to – their way of playing cricket is by batting time in the nets and figuring out all that kind of stuff. For me, early doors, I was facing the bowlers in the nets, doing everything I could, work hard, present yourself. When you play for a long time at the highest level, for me, it was switching off.
How do you mean switching off?
So switching off, not thinking about who I'm coming up against, not thinking about where the guy's going to bowl the ball. I already know that. So I want to know that when I'm walking out to the middle, that's when I want to go, all right, I'm on. I'm in the arena now. That's when I focus. If I focus too much about before I go into that arena, your mind, like, you won't be able to sleep. You won't be able to think straight. You know, you go to practice and you start practicing things that you just wouldn't. When I go to practice, I practice volume, practice hitting the ball in the middle of the bat, getting my timing right. That's all I focus on. I don't focus
things
about-
Things you can control.
That's the only thing I can control. Because at the end of the day, I find you want to keep perfecting your perfections. Right, you want to keep getting better at what you do better. If you want to work on your weaknesses, you're actually putting the other stuff to the side. So I've always thought my weaknesses are always going to be there. It's how do I sort of not get out with that weakness? What can I do to negate that? Not about how am I going to tackle that. I need to worry about my cover drive and my pull shot and my reverse sweeps. That's all I have to worry about. Because your weaknesses, I find, if you put too much focus on that, you'll end up still playing those kind of shots. You'll still look to be defensive. I'm an attacking player. If I look to be defensive, I might as well just kick him over and walk off.
It's funny you should say, because it's a bit like, I mean, that's one of the reasons I gave golf up, because I started taking golf lessons and like I was more confused after golf lessons than I was before. I was hitting the ball better before.
I can hear so much to bloody think about.
I was getting brain damage from thinking about this shit, you know?
Yep.
So would it be fair to say you're like an instinctive batsman? In other words, you sort of play what's in front of you.
Yep. Yeah, and that's why I always talk about to the younger guys whenever they ask me for any advice or what do I do with training, they always say, you know, what do you do with hitting? I said, if I'm not in any good form, which I mean out of runs, I hate the word form, I would say less is more.
Meaning what? What do you mean less is more?
Meaning that take your mind away from it. Go do something outside of it. If you've got a main session, you go to your main session, you do what you have to do, whether it's catches, you know, I have a light hit. Don't think you have to hit for an hour and a half. I only hit for probably half an hour to 45 minutes max. One session I'll probably do for an hour and a half leading into a test match just to get volume of concentration, a bit of fatigue with a new ball and watch the ball swing. But all the other stuff, I go play golf. As you said, you don't like it, it's brain damage. It's tough, right? A lot of the cricketers play golf. But take your mind away from the game. That's the best thing that you can do if you find yourself out of runs. Get yourself away from it. Do something you enjoy outside of what you love doing, which is cricket. And then you'll find that your narrow point, you'll come together. You'll be right here in the moment. Because when you go walk out in that arena, that's when it all comes to you. Everything outside of that, you don't have a worry in the world. So just put your cricket kit down. Go enjoy yourself. Go for a run. Have a cup of coffee. And just embrace what living's about.
How does when you're a kid, how do you manage this part? So when you're a kid, you're doing it with your brother, older brother, and you've got Usman Khawaja's older brother, and no doubt Usman was there too, and you're all having fun. You're sort of, you know, at the nets or fucking around somewhere, like you might have a stump and you might be hitting a tennis ball or something, just having fun, hitting up against the wall, and then playing cricket and enjoying yourself. Like you might be club cricket at school or whatever the case may be, then you're off to East later on. Having fun. Do you remember the time when you differentiated to when you're having fun to when it became a profession? Do you remember the moments or the weeks or the period where all of a sudden this became Dave Warner, everyone's watching you, this is your career, mate, really, compared to you were just having fun up to that point, or has it never been the case?
It's never been the case. I think I look back and just say I sort of fell into sort of everything that I've done. Under-19s, when you make the Under-19s World Cup team, that's when people say, you know, that's where you should start getting serious, because that next step from 19s to men, and when I mean men, you're playing against very experienced players, because you go from 19s to guys that are 37, 38, James Anderson still playing at 40+. So you've got that time frame there. You go, you could have 3 years that are pathetic and then go, I hate the game. I want to get away from it. But for me, it was just more focusing on just playing, rocking up on the weekend, playing with my mates, going to training Tuesday, Thursday afternoons, and just loving the game. And I did work hard back then. I worked a lot on my game. And you only had probably 15, 20 minutes in grade cricket in the nets. And I think that's probably why I've started training like that, because you only had those moments to train. And that was the only part you could get better. I had half an hour a week to try and get better for the Saturday. So I sort of emulated that to today, but the hard work that went in between that sort of from 19 to say 23, 24 when I got my first contract, there was a lot of hard work. And you do need some luck. You do need some people to fail, you to score runs, people to see you scoring runs. And then the next level, Brad Haddin always said to me, you're 100 away from that next step.
And it always runs.
You're 100 runs away from the next step. Because then your name's up here. So you're identified as a youngster if you've got talent. That's one thing. But to excel, had the character and the charisma as well to, like, you know, put it out there. And I was always that sort of, I won't say attack dog, but I was always that bullish kid that wanted to get into a contest. So I'd hit a ball and say, shot, mate, going past the bowler or something like that, just to egg the bowler on, just to come at me a little bit. And I really enjoyed that and embraced it. But then you've got to, you know, as the next steps get higher and higher, and then you get your baggy greens or My first game was a 2020 game for Australia before that. That's when you go, whoa, I'm here, I'm with the big boys. So, and then it's like you got to try and your level comes back down to here again. It's like you're restarting again.
Yeah, because they're all better than you or more experienced than you. They've all been there forever.
Definitely, 100%. And you got to earn respect as well. Can't just come in there being who I am today. It just doesn't work.
Were you a cheeky bastard?
100%.
Yeah, and when you said, because, you know, you obviously give me a little bit of a sledge, as you just said, to the bowler, you hit a nice blah, blah. But, like, how important is, do you think, in your career at least, given that you are already saying that you are not the technician who sat down and did analyze data and, you know, like sort of build up this big program. So people are not going to say, wow, Dave Warner is like the most crazy trainer and technician in the whole competition. But how important then was it for you to get on and sort of display your character, your personality, you know, like as being aggressive, not taking a backward step? How important was that? And were you conscious of that?
I wasn't conscious of it, no. And that's where it probably led to me to some discretions or indiscretions with some players on the field.
Going too far.
Yeah, going too far. And like, I think sometimes what happens is the IPL has created this massive family of friends. So now when you play international cricket, you have probably played with at least 4 or 5 of those people in a game before and you've shared the change rooms. So now I look back going, okay, could I have been that same person back then? Would I have got here today if I wasn't that person back then? That's what got me going when I was out there. Oh, I've said this before. If it wasn't for my wife, I definitely wouldn't be here playing cricket. No way.
But going back then too?
Going back then, I was sort of, you know, I was going out a little bit. When I say a little bit, I was going to pubs and stuff just after games and having a drink and whatnot. And, you know, I had an indiscretion in 2013, and that's when Candace reached out to me again. And from there, I could sort of see now with the players back then who have families and stuff, why they weren't going out, how everything was treated so serious. Because I just thought, well, I'm having the best time of my life. I'm playing for my country. I was in England at the time, and I'm like, how good is this? Like, why wouldn't I go out? Why wouldn't I make the most of it? Like, I don't understand what's wrong with it. And as you mature, you understand why people were giving you advice, why they were telling you, you know, you got to get up for training, you shouldn't be training hungover, all this kind of stuff. So for me, as each year went along and, you know, the process has changed.
But do you have a mentor? Did you have a mentor during that period? Is there some one person or a couple of people? I mean, I know, I don't know this, but I sort of recall a bit. Billy Anderson was pretty close to Usman Khawaja.
Yep.
And I know Billy, you know, what he's like. He's ex-coach and legend. Ex-cricketer, great dude. He coached me in footy, actually.
Okay.
I mean, he was a very good rugby league player. Yeah, he had a car accident and he couldn't run anymore. But he went back into his cricket. But was there someone like that in your life?
Yeah, I have a really close mate of mine called Wayne Geber. You know, played cricket with my brother, grew up with him. You know, he's a fitness trainer. He's a guy that I could always lean on. And my manager at the time, Tony Connolly, who sadly passed away, he...
As in player manager?
Yeah, player manager at the time. He came over to England with me, with both of them. And they said, look, we're getting out of England. There's too much media. Let's go to France for the day. So I went out of France and I got the tube from, I think it was St. Pancras, and we arrived at 9:30 in the morning and we're walking up to the Champs-Élysées. I walk into the breakfast part and I walk out with 3 champagnes. And they both said to me, they said, you know, the reason we're over here is to stop you drinking and get you straight back on the, you know, the road ahead and the path that we need you to get on. And I just... They looked at me and just said, that is you. That's the person you are. You take this on board, what's just happened, and we know where you're going to go with this. You're going to be fine. We know that, but we have to come here and give you advice and speak to you. And they were very comforting. It was awesome. It was one of the greatest couple of days I've spent with two really, really close friends of mine, and I really enjoyed that. And then probably from there, when I started talking to Candace, everything started to gel. So it was like 3 people that just came together and was like, look, this is what you got to do. This is what you have to do.
Do you think you've had a, like a, it sounds like you've had a sort of a blessed life in that things sort of definitely happen to you at the right times when 100%, you need it.
100%. And as I say, you need luck in the game.
But that's sort of, do you think you made your luck though? Do you think you made your luck by being the personality you are, making yourself attractive to the two guys you're just talking about, your manager agent and your brother's mate, and also made yourself attractive to, say, someone like Candace, who in herself was an accomplished sports person. Do you think it was because you made yourself attractive and you attracted the right people, or do you think it's just or that's absolute luck you bless yourself for?
I think you do attract people with your personality as well, and you know that's why personalities clash. You're never going to have two of the same of me. It will probably be impossible in the same group of friends. But at that time, it was what I needed, and it showed to me the genuine care that people have, as we were talking about before, is that they want you to succeed. They want the best for you, but it's how you react to what they're telling you and how you gain momentum from what they're saying. And as you said, Candace is an accomplished sports person herself, an individual sport. When she came into my life and saw that I was a drink after the game and go out and have dinner and this and that and sleep until 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, she was like, you're wasting your morning. You're wasting like 5 hours of training time that you can be getting better. And from that day that we started training, or I started getting up at 5 in the morning because she was already out by 4:30 going to swimming. That was when it took me about a week before I said, let's just go to the gym. And I'd go to the gym, come 8:30, I'd be like, wow, how good is today? And it sort of just stuck with me the whole entire, well, until today. It still sticks with me now.
You know, it's very interesting what you just said, Dave. It's really, really interesting. And I was just thinking back through then. There's something quite unique about swimmers, because Candace was swimming at Cranbrook, yep. I remember, because my son was, one of my sons the same age as her. She was, I think, my year younger than her. And I was in the same squad at Cranbrook there. They used to train with, I can't remember his name, but, and he used to do a 4:30. So over many years, swimmers like Candace, because she was a swimmer before she was doing other stuff, yep, or her other sports, they developed this discipline of getting out of bed at 4:30 in the morning, getting to training at 5 and training for the thing, backing up again in the afternoon. And then during the school holidays, when everyone else is out drinking and carrying on, they're competing on Saturday mornings. And so they couldn't go Friday night. Sunday was their own, pretty much their only day off. They have this incredible discipline around their life. Whereas mates of mine who played high level cricket is generally speaking, to be honest with you, without being disrespectful, it's a bit undisciplined.
It's true.
And, you know, because it's a sort of a different life. You know, you start later. You don't have to be as fit. Yep. It's not as disciplined as swimming, for example. Just swimming is like an extreme thing.
That's crazy.
You're going up and down the pool, looking at the dotted line. I don't know how my son did it, but like he did it. That, meeting someone like that, as opposed to her being attracted to you, you meeting a person like that with that discipline, how important is that in terms of changing your life? Because you just said she started getting you up early. You're not getting up 10, 11 o'clock in the morning. If you're going to get up early, you can't go to bed late.
Yeah.
Or you can't have as many beers, etc.
Yeah.
And you started to work shit out.
Yeah.
How important was that?
Very important. Very, very important. And then I think Candace fell pregnant with our first child. I stopped drinking for two years.
Three girls, haven't you?
Three girls, yeah. Yep. I stopped drinking for 2 years. And she was like, I only did it because when Candace fell pregnant, I was like, I might as well just do 9 months of you. I'm going to stop drinking. I'll just keep training and whatnot. See if I feel any different. Backing up from each game, you probably didn't feel a lot different, but your mind was a lot clearer. And I really enjoyed that. But a small sacrifice for a bigger gain, I was like, okay, I'm going to try that. I'm going to try and do that. And it was a conversation with a mate as well when I was over in New York coming back from a trip overseas. And he said the same thing to me. He goes, why don't you just stop drinking? Stop drinking for a couple of years, just, or, you know, whether it's 12 months, whatever it is, and just see what value you get out of it. I think the value I got out of that was actually that I don't need to get on the piss like every Friday, Saturday night. I don't need to have 30 drinks a night. I can still have – so what I did was I actually got into wine, got into vodka and beer business, which actually I understood what, you know, drinking was all about. It's actually just – it's a social thing, you know. So I would have a wine or so with Candace. She's not a big drinker at all. She doesn't like it. But, you know, from there we sort of, you know, enjoyed a drink together. And then I didn't have an – I didn't need to go out and have these, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday nights out and then try and play cricket.
Because at some point have a partner 100%. Who's like-minded to you. Like if yep. they're a pisshead, more than likely become a pisshead.
Yeah.
I'm gonna ask you an obvious question because like I grew up in the West and like it's a bit of it's just an obvious question. You grew up in the Housing Commission and back then Matraville was sort of, these days it's pretty fancy, but those days it wasn't. And a bit like where I grew up, you could have gone either way. You probably got mates who are just still on the drink, still doing six schooners a day down at the local pub. Why didn't you become the typical dude? Why didn't you become the typical Matraville guy from the houses? Like, and I know in my case why I didn't, but why didn't you become that person?
Because I reckon I always wanted to be a sports person. I played tennis, rugby league, soccer and cricket growing up. So I always had, it's funny because I always had, it sounds a bit weird, but I had Michael Schumacher and Ayrton Senna up on my wall as a kid. Why I was attracted.
Formula One drivers.
Why I was attracted to them.
That's interesting.
It was more the thrill. So watching those cars, you know, zoom around on the track, you know, watching it on TV, I'd always get up and make sure I was watching. I don't follow it passionately, but it was just them two guys that really stuck in the back of my mind. But the goal for that was I wanted the car. So I had an ambition of mine to go, how am I going to get that car? So I had to work hard, save, you know, try and do something in life because I wasn't, you know, I wasn't great at school. I didn't have the attention span of probably a goldfish. I just like literally, you know, memory's crap. But for me, it was about what can I do with my skills? Now, I was athletic. I had the capability of hand-eye and I had a discipline of work because I was working at Woolworths. So I had all those things that I was like, well, I've got to do something with my life. And if I could do that, that was through cricket. But I played multi-sports up until I was about 18, 19. And I think that was probably the key because then you gave yourself options. But you still, your hand and your eyes and your feet were all moving with different sports. So I think that's probably what led me into cricket and sort of knuckling down at cricket. But I think also because I really enjoyed it.
So
cricket saved me 100%.
Or sport generally.
Sport general.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with Plush Care. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
It's funny, you know, I mates of mine who are cricketers, I played a bit of cricket at school because everyone did, but like the guys who excelled at cricket, like I was in Graham Hughes' side, right? And yep. Heaps had the front of his face, and I'm looking at your eyes now, the eyes are very square, and yep. I often wonder about cricketers in particular or anyone who's got that ball, eye-hand coordination with a ball. The tennis players will. They tend to have their eyes in very set position in the front of their face. I don't know if you ever noticed this, but and I wonder whether there's some sort of genetic advantage that someone like you has in terms of being a really good batsman or even a bowler or someone who can catch as well, that cricketers have over above everyone else, all the rest of us. You have something above all of us. Have you ever thought about the genetic, your genetics relative to your ability, your not just skill, but your ability to be a good cricketer?
I think this is, you can probably say that about West Indian athletes.
Yeah.
You know, they're powerful. They're fast. And they're like, seriously, they you just want to watch them. I would sit there and just go, I want to watch these guys play cricket. I want to watch them run. Like, I think genetics does play a role in that. I think.
But what do you think your genetic advantage is?
I think for me, it's probably not genetic, but it's more anticipation. I can read things. I can read plays. I can sort of know what's coming.
Can you tell that by the way the bowler runs into the bowl? I mean,
I watch a lot of cues. So in my time, normally when a batsman, so I'll walk to the side, take my gloves, like do this, but I do that for a reason. And I've never said this publicly, but I watch the bowler all the way back to his mark. Bowlers, they look to the, so if they're going to bowl a short ball, my belief is 9 times out of 10, they'll look the square leg before they bowl the ball or before they turn around and then come in and deliver the ball. Then sometimes what they do is they run in faster. So you go, all right, if he's running in faster, he's obviously going to bowl a short ball. Or if it's the first ball of his spell, he's not going to bowl me Yorker, he's not going to bowl me bouncer, he's going to be on a line and length so I can play a different shot. These are little cues that you pick up with different players. And that goes back to you talking about like analytics and stuff. You know the bowlers. You played against them before. So your instinct naturally tells you, okay, I can read him here. I know exactly. It's not going to come off all the time, but you just specifically you know when you can read a bowler, that's when it makes everything out there feel like it's in slow motion.
So it's funny that you're sort of looking for their tell. It's like you're playing a hand of poker.
Yeah, pretty much.
Which is probably why Shane Warne loved having a game of poker. But do you think the bowlers do it to the batsman?
Warney was like that. Warney was a genius. He was a genius at that. He used to just work the batters over all the time, set them up. And it wasn't until the end of his career that he actually detailed what he was actually doing.
Oh, really? He talked about it.
A fair few of the players didn't even know what he was doing on his own team. But he used to just work him across and set him up for his slipper. I think it was Cullen and he got out for fun. But Cullen was, as soon as he walked out, Cullen was like, okay, well, what's going to happen here? He's going to bowl me this. I know he's going to bowl me this. He's not getting me out. Bowled him out and got him out. That's just the aura that he had as well on the field.
Do you think it was like some sort of, there was a little bit of nearly hypnotic in
100%.
He'd get him to do what he wanted him to do.
Definitely.
No matter what.
Definitely. And you could probably say it's similar to me and Stuart Broad in England. You know, I knew exactly what he was going to deliver, but it was about, instead of me going, how am I going to score off it? I'm thinking, how am I going to defend it? And that's what I said before. If I'm going to go there and have the defensive mindset, I might as well just walk off.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but
in terms of your style.
Yeah, but the style of the game when it's out there doesn't allow you to always attack. So you have to have some form of defense. And that year, 2019, it was one of those ones I've just let myself down.
Who's your greatest hero in cricket? Do you have one?
There's many. Like, I don't just have one.
You've got a couple throw around.
Yeah, well, Warney was one that I idolized. I tried to replicate the way that he bowled until I met him. I didn't realize how strong his fingers were and big, how broad he was as well. So he had all that power just to walk in. As a kid, trying to walk in and bowl just doesn't work. Anyone that knows cricket knows you just can't walk in and bowl. You have to actually have like a bit of a rhythm. He never had that rhythm, but his rhythm was all shoulder at the crease, and he was so good at it. Ricky Ponting, I really enjoyed watching him as a kid growing up. We talk about, you know, getting into your innings. He had this big stride, and his big stride used to be his, you know, downfall, but didn't matter. He still scored a lot of runs doing the same thing all the time, all repetition. Just knew if you got through that first sort of 20 balls, he was on. And then I think Adam Gilchrist, from a opening batter's point of view, someone with an X factor, he was something special. Like, he had the carefree attitude, and that's what I loved about him, and that's where that sort of reflected upon me in my game as well.
Can we just look at some of the that they're guys that you either played with or watched, observed? What about blokes you played with? Who's some of the great friendships you got out of cricket? I mean, I know there's probably hundreds, but who's some of the great friendships you've got out of cricket?
I think growing up with Uzi from the start and playing all the under-19s, 17s, New South Wales, all that, he's one of my very, very close mates.
Still today?
Still today.
Yep.
Yeah. we still, you know, all our whole team, we all get along really, really well. But it goes back to when you're hanging with everyone 24/7, so 300 days of the year, the last thing we probably all want to do is hang with each other.
Totally.
So for us, like after the game, you know, we'd, I think when we look back at our careers, we'd all have strong friendships with each other. If you go across the ditch, Kane Williamson's a good friend of mine. You build these relationships with people just through IPL, through playing against each other. You know, there's a lot in the team there, in our team, that we're all, I'm good friends with.
And people don't realize it, but Steve Smith's another Mad Rooster.
We try to get together sometime to try and get to the games, but we're never in the same time. He's either in New York or, you know, with his spare, he doesn't have any kids. So with his spare time, him and his missus are out traveling the world. So, which is great.
Did you ever think to yourself that, because particularly if you go back 20 years, well, when you were a kid, teenager, do you ever think cricket was going to be so rewarding in a financial sense? Like cricket, I can't remember back then, but like I don't think it was people earning or the opportunities to earn money were nowhere near what they are today or haven't been in the last 5-6 years. Do you ever have that sense that this is a way of making a good quid?
No, not at all. Because when I played the game, I wasn't getting paid to start with. Like, you know, through under-19s and that, we had to go back home and work. It was only my first sort of, I think, second 11 game, all that. We got like $500 for the week to play a four-day game. And, you know, I was earning a bit more than that at Woolworths. And I was like, well, why would I go and play cricket and then cost myself money? So for me, it was like if cricket was going to be my passion. Now, I didn't know what contracts were. I didn't know what the starting base was. And for me, when I started, it was $12,500 as a rookie contract, which I got. And then you had these stipulations where you had to come to training. I think it was Monday, Wednesday, Friday, but it was in the mornings and then you can go work. And then all these programs were put to place. But then I got upgraded that same year. Then I think it was $36,000.
Upgraded in terms of salary?
Yeah, from a rookie to a full base contract.
As an under-19 player?
No, when I was 22, 23. So you're in the playing
for South Wales as a stage, yeah.
Yeah.
Again, and yeah. But did you ever think to yourself, I'm going to be at a stage where I can earn like quite a lot of dough?
No, not at all. And I think,
how have you dealt with that though? Because
I think if you play, you have to play for Australia.
Yeah.
To earn the series cash. Like you have to. But now today you've got the Big Bash League. The contracts through revenue through the game has increased. So the state contracts are quite healthy now. We wouldn't be in a position if it wasn't for the guys that came before us. And I'm so ever grateful for that opportunity that they've given us. You know, the things that have come for those guys is there's coaching. Coaches are well remunerated now. You got commentary, which those guys are well remunerated now. But without their expertise and their coverage of us, we all can't do what we love. And we have to thank them. And I always thank them. And I'm appreciative of what they've done for us. But I can see in 10, 15 years' time, it's going to get even bigger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so at the end of the day, what we're doing now, if you want to earn a significant amount of money, you can play in all these franchise cricket games. But what do you want to be remembered for? Do you want to play cricket for Australia? You want the bag of green? You've got to work hard. You know, only 11 players can take that field. It's a hard thing to do. Everything has to fall in your favor, you know, and it's not an easy job when you're there. It's tough. It's tough to stay up there. You know, you're 3 or 4 innings away before you're probably going to get dropped. But if you cement yourself in there for 20, 25 games, you get a bit of leeway. You get that trust. You know your game plan.
How's it work? So that's interesting. So because at the end of the day, it's not your decision. It's the selector's decision. And to some extent, captain's input into that sort of stuff. How do you look at it in like a real business sense? In other words, I know the selectors, I know what the captain's looking for. I'll play with those characteristics so that I do get selected, or do you just say, I'm going to play my game?
You just play your game. You back yourself.
What if they're not into that? What if they say, well, look, we don't like the way Dave is playing anymore. Were you happy enough to say, okay, fuck it, though, I'm out of relevancy?
You just got to trust your method. If your method works for you, it will work. Best currency in cricket is runs.
Currency, that's a good word to use. You're right. That's your runs. Money. That's your.
Yep. That is. If you keep scoring runs, keep knocking on the door, your name's going to be there and they'll come for you. But you've got to be patient. Don't go out there wondering why they're not picking me. Just keep doing what you do. Stay in your lane. That's all you have to do. That's all you have to focus on. If you start focusing on the other stuff and you fail a couple of times, they don't remember what you did then. So you got to be mindful of all that stuff. And you got to remember at the end of the day, it is an individual sport when you're in the middle by yourself.
Yeah, totally.
But it's a team sport. The most important thing for me is making sure everyone's doing the right thing for the team when they're playing. You know, so you're batting in partnerships. What's the score? What's the scoreboard say? You know, how do we go about it? You know, just recently watched Australia and New Zealand and the way that Mitch Marsh and Alex Carey batted. They're two type of guys that have to trust their method and go at them. And they went at them and it came off. But if they went in their shell, they would have fell apart.
And played defensive.
It wouldn't have happened. And that's the X factors that people are looking for as well. You know, it's the dynamics of the game. The game's changing as well. You have to respect maybe in the first innings. Still can play your shots. Mitchell Marsh is a great example. You know, don't know why the public didn't like him. He kept getting picked. He got booed in Melbourne.
Really?
It was disgraceful. The MCG, a couple of years back, he walked out and he got booed. And we're sitting there as Australian cricketers going, our own homegrown supporters are booing one of our players walking out because they felt like he shouldn't have been selected. Like, give the guy a break, you know? But now he's come back and he's the most likable Australian cricket player that we have. But that's always been Mitch Marsh. You know, it's always been him. He went and didn't change his game. He went out and just kept playing his way. But you mature as well. So he keeps backing himself. So he thought he might have had to go back into his shell, be defensive and whatnot. He played one of the best hundreds I've ever seen in England. Turned the game on its head. And then to come out and do what he's done the last sort of 12 to 18 months has been impressive. And it's been great to watch.
Especially with the ball.
And that's back up against the wall stuff as well. He spoke about it. He goes, I thought my career was over. I'm happy playing with WA. Uzzy's the same. Captained, was out of the game for 2 years. Captained Queensland. But everything falls into this little jar when you're going well and the runs is your currency. And you forget about the external stuff. Because the other stuff that plays its role is the media.
Oh, my God.
You know, the media. So the media get on board with this. All right, we don't want this guy playing. Okay, let's go. Let's go at him. Yeah, you know, that's what happens. It does happen like that. It happens in every sport. It happens in everyday business. You know, it's their job. I respect them. I respect you all for what you do. But sometimes in the back of your mind, you're always thinking, all right, am I the next person? Am I the next person? You know, a couple of failures, are they going to come after me? But, you know, if they do, so be it.
So, obviously, you've been through it. I've been through it myself in a business sense too. But, like, in a sporting sense, you've been through it, which is your business, by the way. You've been through it. I mean, you know, through that terrible period in your life. How did you deal with the media? What did you lean into?
I leant into trying to work with them.
How?
Trying to find a narrative, where the narrative is.
Did you talk to them? You
build up relationships. You definitely have to build up relationships. Because what happens is sometimes they might not watch the game and just see the scorecard. They don't see, you know, the ebb and the flow of the game. Now, the cricket writers do. It's the opinion piece people that don't.
Yeah, yeah. So
they see the headlines.
And they might have read someone else's opinion too.
Exactly.
And they thought, their editor might say, listen, we've got to cover this story.
100%.
But do you reach out to them though? Like, do you sort of ring up a particular cricket writer and say, look, hey, mate, how you going? We'll find myself a cup of coffee.
Opinion piece are people who want clickbait.
Yep.
So that's their job.
You leave them alone.
If their currency is to get clicks, so be it.
Because you won't change that.
No. Because the everyday person who's actually interested in the game will go into the article and read the article and will put two and two together that the headline doesn't match. And yep. We know that today with every single thing that you click on, it's hardly got anything to do with the article. So for me, I had to understand the media. So I had to understand what was involved of it. And it didn't really bother me at all. Anyone that was writing negative stuff about me didn't bother me. They're just wasting their time.
Have you ever been booed when you go on it?
Oh, booed. Gee whiz. Get booed in the streets. It is what it is.
Okay, so that's how you do it.
That's what I've always said. If anyone wants to have a beer with me, come have a beer with me.
You can just cop it sweet there.
Exactly. It is what it is. It's part and parcel of what you do. Like if you're out there in the open and you're putting, you know, you're playing cricket for Australia, you're going to be up there on a billboard. You know, people are going to like you. People aren't going to like you. But at the end of the day, I'm doing my best for my country and my sport. The last year, everyone's saying that I should be dropped. That's fine. but that's out of my control. If they drop me, they drop me. You know, if they don't, then I get to keep playing and keep doing my best for the team and building partnerships with Uzi at the top of the order to make sure that our batting structure is in line and in place. And if we're winning games, that's the best thing that can happen to you when you're not scoring as much as you'd like as well. So you've got to put that mindset as well. If you take all the other stuff out of it, you'll be fine.
Do your colleagues have the same thing? Because obviously Smith is getting a bit of a hard time at the moment because he's not doing particularly well. But it'll happen, but eventually. But
yeah.
Do you ever sort of lean into your colleagues and sort of say to your old mates that who are now still playing, test cricket or one days, do you say, hey, mate, it's just she'll be okay? Do you lean into them? Do they sort of come into you?
Yeah, you do offer some help. You do reach out. I think more specifically the guys reach out when we're not doing as well as we'd like and you pick each other up. And that's the most important. The most important thing is to do is when someone gets dropped from the team, you have to keep in contact.
Right.
It's important. You know, you don't want to feel like, okay, I'm part of the Australian cricket team. Well, hang on, now I'm not. I'm part of the New South Wales cricket team. But they're my mates. I've been playing with them for however long. Now I'm back here. So you feel this disconnect, massive disconnect.
If you're the person who's been disconnected.
If you are, yeah. Yeah, definitely. But it's upon you as a person. If you're that type of person who keeps in touch and whatnot, that's why I think the responsibility lies.
Are you that dude? I always
text everyone.
Is that always. Like a, not a tradition, but is that a cultural thing within cricket, like in Australian cricket that, you know, like if, I don't know, if one of your test teammates gets dropped and he ends up playing for New South Wales and doesn't get a run for a while, is that everybody reaches back to that person and say, man, how are you going?
It's upon the individual. I've had a few messages, but I know all the time I always try and keep in touch with everyone that's played with me. Doesn't matter what team it is, I always try and keep in touch and ask people how they're going, you know, just offer a bit of sounding board for them. Because I think it's important. Cricket, there's a lot of cricketers in the world. We're a family. You know, you want people to spread the love. And I really want that to keep going and keep moving forward, and I want – and more kids participating in cricket. So I think it's a responsibility of mine to have genuine care for people that I actually genuinely care about. And I've always said that if I'm not messaging that person, it's not that I don't genuinely care. It's I genuinely care for people who I've played with and I'm always in touch with in general, just to see how they're going. Because it's hard. It's hard being at the top.
I don't know if people would think that about Dave Warner, though. I mean,
the opinion of what happens in the media and stuff like that. And that's why I always say, I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't care what people's perception of me. If you stop me in the street and I've got time, I'll have a coffee, I'll have a beer with you, I will. I've met some Twitter people that have badgered me over the years and I've become friends with them. And it's, you know, still have a chat, caught up for a beer and this and that. Their opinion changes because people have social media, everyone has an opinion now. You know, people can change certain things and sell a narrative down one street about someone and then someone comes on top. It's a powerful thing. I was just lucky it didn't start early doors for me.
When you were less mature.
When I was less mature. I had one run in with some journos, but that was on the basis of something that was pretty crude in the back of a paper. And that was dealt with within sort of 48 hours. But for me, I felt at that time, when I'm saying understand the media, I felt someone's having a crack at me.
It's unfair.
It's on the back of the page of the national paper about something that was happening. I'm not involved in this, so why is my photo there? So I just had a crack at him and, yeah, it was probably the wrong way about going about it, a few beers in. But then I had to understand the media and what it was about. So then I sort of learnt a lot. I learned a lot about it.
Can I go back to your wife?
Yep,
and the mother
definitely.
Of you, both of you got three girls, Candace. You mentioned how you sort of met up with her or she came back into your life or came into your life. How does someone like you, who's sort of a front pager pretty much, especially in the cricket world, how do you make sure that your other half gets what she deserves in terms of what she gives to your family? Because, I mean, like, she was a sports person herself, but all of a sudden she's out there with a much more famous sports person. Not saying better, but just more famous because it's a more relevant sport, et cetera. More people follow it, cricket. How do you help her stay relevant to in your own lives? I mean, or do you not worry about it? She's just so mature, you didn't have to bother about that sort of stuff.
We always talk about we're a team. We're a team.
And so
we
do she feels together. Part of your success.
100%. 100%. We're part of each other's lives, like day in, day out. We'd know each other's, you know, calendar, ins and outs of what we're doing, what we're trying to achieve. And we have systems in place to try and, you know, reach what we're trying to do. You know, Candace, it's been difficult. You know, it's not an easy thing. Me being away 6 to 8 weeks at a time, kids, since the kids went to school, it's been even harder. Trying to find 2-3 week window where they can come over. You know, Candace wants to work and she's doing some radio stuff and some TV stuff now, which is awesome and something that she's passionate about. And she's able to do that now because I'm tapering off. That's something we'd spoke about before me retiring. She wanted me to keep going.
Oh, really?
And Candace wanted me to keep playing. And I said, I just can't keep going on like this with me being away. If I play a test series, then, you know, you go away to another league and then you're playing an international series again. Like winter series goes from, so the boys were just in New Zealand. They go to the IPL. We've got a World Cup in the Caribbean. So that goes to June. Then there's another league after that, which goes to the end of, I think, the beginning of August. So if I'm away for that period of time and you're in Americas, it's a long time away. And it's difficult. So
it sounds glamorous.
But it sounds glamorous, but it's not because At the end of the day, you got to care for your wife and your three kids. And every parent out there that knows, you come to those witching hours after school, before school. Like, they're things I love doing and we do it together very well. We've still got this routine. Candace will wake up at 5:45 religiously in the morning. She'll go walk the dog. She'll go grab the coffees, come back, and then I'll be up at, say, 6:15, 6:30. I'll help make the sandwiches, all the stuff that we have to do to get ready. By 7 o'clock, we're ready. The kids don't have to go till 8:15. I'm like, it's just a routine. She's always done that. She refuses to wake up at, say, 7. But with Candace, her sort of discipline is rubbing off on the kids. And that's something that I don't reckon I would have been able to teach my kids, is being that discipline of getting up, doing your chores.
Structured.
Structured, yeah. The structure is proper. And I think that's where now moving forward, it's about Candace. It's about Candace and doing what she wants to do, and she's doing that now, and I'm really happy for her because she's given me the ultimate sacrifice by staying at home with the kids, bringing the kids up without – basically, she's been a single mom pretty much. We're away, 250-60 days of the year.
Wow.
It's a long time. It's a long time. And then even when we're home for summer, we're in Queensland, we're in Perth, and, you know, same thing. Kids can't just drop out of school. Otherwise, you're getting the report card that your kid misses too much school. So, you know, and we want the best success for our kids as well. So we want them to have success. So we don't want them to miss out on schooling. Like, you know, me and Candace probably weren't the brightest students, but we want the kids to have the best opportunity to learn. And we don't want to take them out of school.
And what does that mean too much? Then? What does that mean, David? Like, so giving your kids the best opportunity to learn, what do you think?
Opportunity to have a better education.
Than you had.
Then when I had, yeah. So quite clearly we know with kindergarten to year six if your kid's going to have the attention span and all that kind of stuff. Then it's finding the way that we can help them into what they do like. For me, it was basically go to primary school, then go to high school. I only went to Ramit Boys because my parents knew with, at that time, Matchville, South Sydney and JJ Carl didn't have a cricket team. So how was I ever going to try and play cricket? So Ramit Boys actually accepted me on the proviso that I was playing cricket and playing rugby. So I was fortunate for that. That's where with our kids, we want to give them the best opportunity to excel in other areas that we didn't have the opportunity to do. And so kids will go to, I think Ivy's going to go to St. Catharines.
That's at back at Bronny there?
Yeah, back at Bronny. When I walked into that school on an open day, I think Candace went there for 1 year. I think she got a scholarship and then left. But I've walked in, I've gone, if I came here, okay, I know it's girls' school, but if I went to a boys' school that was very similar, I don't think I could fail at anything. The opportunities that those schools have compared to the public school system is outrageous. I could not believe it when I walked in there. And then I understood why the fees are how they are. Because back then, if I looked at that, my parents would go, well, what's that worth? Come on.
You can't afford it.
We can't afford it. But like, what are you going to get out of it? When I walked in there, I'm like, man, if I could start my life again, if I could actually put my hard work and money into it, I'd help my parents try and somehow fork out the fees for those things, because that is incredible. The facilities are incredible.
How old are your daughters now?
9, 8, and 4.
So one daughter being like a year 8 or 9 or something.
Ivy's going to 5 next year.
Okay. Yep. And she's at St. Catharines.
She's at St. Mary's and Joseph's now, but she'll start in year 5.
In St. Catharines. Yep. My mum went to that school actually, and she used to rave about what a good school it was. And the only reason I know where it is because she used to tell me about it all the time because I didn't have daughters. But do you think that you and Candace have a different view when it comes to education to say what your parents might have had because of your economic environment, your financial situation?
100%. And I've always said to Candace that I want to make sure that we educate our kids in finances, how to use money. Like how do you make money? You know, it's not just let's just earn pocket money and spend. Like our middle child is a bit of a tight one. So she's saving, which is great. And I like that. But it's how we teach the kids about value of money.
We put them in Woolworths, you know, we give them a job at Woolies or Maccas.
They'll be doing something. Yeah, they'll be doing something. So I'm looking forward to that day. Yeah. But even like when we go overseas and we say, girls, this is what, you know, we have to spend. This is our budget. If you want to go to breakfast today, you've only got a couple of days with your spending money to go to breakfast. Like we try and teach them what the value is, because it's great we travel the world playing for Australia. You know, your flights and accommodation are paid for you. But when you get there, you're like, okay, we're in England. And the currency is double ours. Yeah. Now, girls, we can't have that. Yeah, no.
A piece of toast is 3 quid.
You know, kids are like, oh, I want a toy. I want this. I want that. And darling, we can get that in Australia for half the price. But it's being smart about it. And we're just trying to educate them. So, you know, they're getting it now, which is great. Young one's definitely not the four-year-old. She's just, I want lollies. but that's what we want in life for our girls, is just the best opportunity to give exactly what our parents did, the love, the care, and just, you know, make sure they're moving forward. And it's, you know, everything's not going to be organic. There's going to be speed humps, but it's how we give them the best opportunity to move forward.
Are they sporty?
Yeah, very. Yeah.
Because you look at the parents. So
different dynamics in body types as well, which is quite.
Really?
Yes.
Take me through it.
So Ivy's more robust and strong, a bit like myself. Indy's, the middle one's quite slim and got sort of Candace's physique, and so does the little one. But the little one's rapid. She's fast.
But they in the pool?
They were, and then. And this is where Candace is great. So Candace obviously did swimming. So we did all the swimming up until they went to their first squad session. First squad session, 9-year-old and 8-year-old, they said, warm up, you got 4 laps of the 50 meters. They did the 4 laps. And Lady goes, oh, we're going to do another 4. They did the whole entire session, came out in the car, and then the elder said, Dad, Mum, I don't want you guys to get mad, but I didn't like that. And I said, well, that's fine by me. But I said, Mum, what are you thinking? And Candace, you know, without, you know, putting it too harshly, she goes, that was silly, like dumb. That session was just dumb for a 9-year-old and 8-year-old. And that day, Candace just pulled him out. They're both exhausted. They're both cooked. And we just said, look, swimming might not be for you. If you don't want to do that, that's what, you know, young kids are doing these days. And because Candace was a swimmer, she goes, girls, I've been there. I've done it. Unless you've got an ambition to be a swimmer, you don't have to do that. You get some lessons outside of that. And that was true to Candace's form by saying, we're never going to push our kids into anything that they want to do.
Girls cricket,
they do. I was umpiring the other day actually for the first time.
I saw that.
I actually enjoyed it.
I saw on your Insta.
I couldn't count the 6. Even though I had a counter in my hand, you just forget to click it over because you're trying to coach both the kids batting and bowling.
Is this Ivy?
Ivy and Indy play in the same team.
Oh, right.
And they played against their same club team. So we're trying to teach them, you know, when to run, when to say no while we're in the game, because that's what it's about. It's about helping as well. It's not just letting them, you know, just get out all the time and whatnot. But yet again, if you don't want to play girls, you don't have to play. But they love it. They absolutely love it. They haven't asked me to take them to the nets, which is weird, but they'll tell me to come have a hit with them in tennis because they really love tennis.
Do they know who their dad is, like, or are you just dad?
I'm dad, but they got a tendency to call me David Warner, full name.
They say they
full
got a,
name.
They call you David Warner.
They're like, David Warner. I was like, that's what mum used to say to me when I was in trouble. So don't call me David Warner. I'm your dad. Simple as that. Like I try. So when we were in India a couple of times, someone come up to me and go, oh, Dave Warner. I was like, no, I'm not Dave Warner. And then Ivor go, yes, you are Dave Warner. I was like, because you try and break the ice a little bit with some people and whatnot. But yeah, they pull you up. That's
they,
for sure.
They know who you are.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They know dad's well known.
And I think that's why I kept playing as well is because you want your kids to know what you do. You know, and I absolutely love the fact that they, you know, got to experience life experiences and they want to do something that, you know, their parents have done. They also, I think Ivy wants to go back to Nippers as well. So I said to Candice, good luck with that. You can go down there on a 7:30 on Sunday morning.
Where's
try
it?
And find
which
parking.
One?
At Maroubra.
Maroubra. Yeah. So are you and Candice conscious of the yeah, what can be considered a burden for your children of the fame of their parents in being able to excel, and that can be a burden for some kids. Like, I'll never be as good as dad or mum.
Yeah,
are you aware of that, and what do you do to prepare for that?
Yeah, I think having having Warner as your last name and whatnot.
Expectations
there are. And I think moving forward, we're going to have to help them in a way to understand that there is going to be media attention if you do excel in something. Or if you stuff up, exactly. Like Ivy's reading a book that was written by some guy in England. It's a children's book about certain football players, soccer players, cricketers and whatnot. And there's a passage in there about the sandpaper gate. And Candice is like, well, can't let Ivy read this. I said, I'm just gonna have to.
Totally.
I said it's better to know all about what's happened today because she's very intellectual. She reads a lot of books. She does ask questions, but it's usually to mum, not to me. And it's better them knowing now and growing up, learning to deal with it in this sort of environment now openly.
Yeah.
And we're educating them on what not to do.
So would you tell them I made a mistake? Would you say, look, I stuffed up. How would you – okay, let's say you're talking to Ivy now and Ivy's reading this book and the senpai gate's in there and Ivy's read this story according to whoever wrote the book and then you sit down there. How far do you go with this? I mean, do you try and give them a life lesson out of it as you learnt it?
Yeah, I you have to because the way that it was written was like basically not talking about my cricket at all. See, the book was about like heroes in sport, but then it came to my sort of
and then put you as a villain
thing. He's like, yeah, it was a pantomime villain, yeah, pretty much, and didn't talk about my sport or what I did. It was just talked about all my other stuff. And I said to Ivy, that's an opinion piece by someone in a book that's actually supposed to have someone idolize you potentially if you like cricket. I said, so you've lived these moments with Dad. You didn't know what was going on back then. You're too young. But there was mistakes that happened. You'll hear more about it later in life. But we're going to try and help you as much as you can to be as good as you can. You're not going to be perfect. And that's the hardest thing. Like now, like she's a perfectionist when it comes to sport, everything that she does when it's, you know, cleaning, bookwork, homework, you name it, she's a perfectionist. And we're trying to tell her that the most important thing is to have fun and enjoy what you're doing. Just enjoy it. That's all that we want is you to enjoy and have fun and make friends. That's all we want for you to do. If things get difficult, talk to us. Because, you know, girls have that tendency just to keep talking to mum. And, you know, guys generally have things that, you know, they just hold with themselves. They won't talk to their mates about it, which I encourage people to do. But with the girls, they always talk to mum. And I'm trying to encourage them to talk to dad because it's okay. It's okay to talk to dad as well. And that's where I'm trying to get a lot out of them. But I have to ask questions.
You have to ask them a question.
If I don't ask questions, then they're not quite clearly going to talk to you. How was your day? I can see that you're upset. Are you okay? You know, they might be tired. Okay, well, let's have a rest. They don't want to rest. Okay, well, then let's work a way out that you're not at, you know, this fatigue stage, whether it's are you doing too much sport? Are you, you know, you're doing homework? Or there's some things that we can sort of taper off. But I think that's the mindset that they have as well, because they see us working hard, and like Candace is just nonstop. There's not a day where she'll sit down and just have a rest. It's crazy. But that's the person that she is. That's how she's structured.
Yeah, but she's an endurance athlete. So
crazy.
Like, and my, you know, my experience with endurance athletes is they tend to be endurance in relation to everything they do. And they're not only unstoppable, but they demand a lot of themselves.
Yep.
Do your kids observe their mother? Sounds like dad's totally different.
Yes.
And they observe their mother. Do you think they know the difference between the two of you, the two characters? Maybe not so consciously, but they – and do you see more of the characteristics of, say, Candace in one of the kids and more of the characteristics of David in another kid? And do you then think to yourself, well, how do we balance that up? How do I get more of Candace, less of me in that particular kid? Have you started to go through those processes?
Yeah, I think Ivy definitely is all mum. Like attention to detail, all that stuff that you're just saying there, 100% that's Ivy. The other two are definitely, the little one is definitely me. It's giving me my attitude when I was that young. And the middle one's just free-spirited. She's just does not care if she wins or loses. She's happy to be there.
Oh, that
she
sounds puts like perfection.
She's got the knack of anticipation and awareness, which is a great skill when it comes to sport. But I would like that more when it comes around the house a little bit. Taking your clothes off, leaving it on the floor. She makes her bed though, which is good. But there's a lot of other things where it's just you have to give a little bit with her before you get a lot back.
It's funny.
And that's learning your kid.
It's funny, David Lee. Like when I was I have four sons and I wasn't lucky enough to have a daughter. But because I grew up in a similar sort of situation to you, like didn't have much. But I was always really conscious of having a lot of money and my kids not thinking it's there for them to spend. So I actually was the other way. I was way over the top in terms of discipline. I would give them nothing and I would say no to everything. Zero, literally no to everything. Actually, I'll tell you a funny story if you've got a second to listen to it.
Of course.
So when my grandson was born, me and my boys are on a group chat, four boys and me. When my grandson was born, I didn't want to be called Grandpa or Pop or a Greek version of that, Papu. I didn't want to be called that. So I wrote a thing. He's six now. I said, well, what do you think we should call? We should get George, my grandson, to call me. And, they got Grandfather, Poppy and all that shit. And one of my sons, my oldest boy, who's 43 this year, he goes, why don't we call you Orky? Now, Orky in Greek means no, because I used to say, whenever they ask me, I say no first. You can ask me anything you want. Can we go to Greece? Can we do this? No. And then I'd make him negotiate with me sort of thing, win me over. So I thought he was saying, call me Orky because that's what I used to say to them. And I wrote, oh, yeah, very funny because I always say no. He goes, no. It stands for, I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but old cranky cunt. Because I was always cranky to my kids. Yeah. I wasn't cranky, but they thought I was being cranky because I was really conscious of not spoiling them and I probably went over the top.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? Not spoiling, because you didn't come from a spoiled environment.
No.
You had great, beautiful parents.
Yeah.
Spoiled in that regard.
Yeah.
But I'm talking in terms of money.
Yeah.
Things, material things.
Yeah. No, it's definitely not the case with us. We are measured with everything, their chores. So they do chores at home, they get rewarded, and then they, as I said, they save. So they have like a little, it's like a little spriggy card.
Yeah, that spriggy, they're great.
And what we've had to teach them is we're talking about money.
They have to learn to put money in a spriggy.
They have to learn to put money in the spriggy,
yeah.
And then they have to learn when they're actually going to pay for things, you got to learn what you got left. So you got to work out how much you're spending and you can't ask mum and dad for money. There's no top-ups. Top-ups only come around probably Christmas time, if anything. And I said that would be through, Nan and Pop and them if they want to put something onto there. But you got to earn it. You know, the odd thing might be like books and stuff like that, all the normal stuff. But everything else is, no, you got to earn it. It's like a new racket. If they want a new racket or new restrings, might be a bit different, but a new racket, you're going to have to earn it. You know, I couldn't afford my first cricket bat. I said to the girl, girls, cricket bats were very expensive back then and they're even more expensive now. So you have to earn these things. And to Ivy's credit, she bought another racket recently because she just felt like she needed a new one. The other one wasn't working and because the sizes go up as well. So she actually put money towards that. And then sometimes if they do want something, and I think the middle one does this a lot, she will buy the youngest one something with a spree card.
Oh, wow.
And we say to Indy, we say, you know what, that's very nice of you. That's very kind. And Candace won't tell her, but she might put an extra $5 or something on there.
Just
as a reward. Because they're things that with Indy, the middle one, as I said, you got to give a little bit to get a lot from her. And she's just wired differently to the other two. So we give a bit more attentive care. And we get a lot more from her, a lot more out of her, whether it's, you know, listening to us, you know, getting ready on time, you know, consciously making sure that we don't raise our voice with her, because she's a feeler. If she does something wrong and we get mad at her, 20 minutes later, she's written something down on a piece of paper and gives it to us saying sorry. Because her emotions, she can't deal with the emotions in that time, in that presence. So for us, we had to learn that with her. And now we know exactly what, you know, sort of ticks her off and stuff like that. So for her to do that, she's got a kind heart. And she does have a kind heart. So we were really impressed with the way that she deals with that stuff.
You know what's really good about talking to you today is that we haven't talked about what I thought we were going to talk about, but what I've learned, because I mean, I do this because I love learning about people, in particular people like yourself, but I've learned that now I know why maybe potentially you're retired from Test cricket and one day, and you're still playing cricket, but like retired from that heavy commitment. Because actually, it seems to me that you're now spending your life and the rest of your life that's ahead of you, because you're still a young man, learning about your kids.
Yep.
And I mean, you're learning a lot of stuff. Yep. About kids who are growing up, and you've got three different kids.
Yep.
And you and Candace together are sort of building strategies and learning about tactics about how do we create these three great kids one day, in a ideal situation, because we're all idealists, a lot of us. We like to have the ideal kids, and we want the kids to be the best version of themselves as possible. And that's bloody hard.
Yep.
And you've got to continually learn.
Yep.
I used to have to learn. My kids are older now, but like I had to continue to learn, and I wasn't conscious of this sort of stuff, to be frank with you, at the time. I am now, but I wasn't conscious of the thing like that particular aspect. And that's where having someone like Candace is really important.
Definitely.
Having the other part.
Yep.
Who's conscious of this sort of stuff can help you through it.
Yep.
Because a lot of times, us dubby blokes, we haven't been trained that way when we were kids. We weren't trained that way. But the modern way is the way you're talking about.
Yeah, definitely.
The two of you working on the strategy together, and you'll fuck up, you'll make mistakes, but then be prepared to make the admission. And sometimes the kids teach us about ourselves.
Yep.
All the time. I mean, I found that in hindsight. I didn't master that stuff until, you know, sometimes a little bit too late. But it's amazing. How old are you?
37.
So it's amazing that at 37, I was having my third or fourth kid. I was nowhere like you are. I nowhere near as advanced as you are, or as conscious, or as deep in the vertical strategy. A vertical strategy.
Yep.
About how each kid operates and how each one interacts and how you interact with them and you interact with your missus. Yep. And she interacts with you, and it's a real complex thing. It's a
puzzle.
It's correct. It's a puzzle, and it keeps changing.
Yep.
Pieces keep going missing, and you get new bits, and you have to find out where they'll fit. And as I said, it's not where I thought I was going to end up with David Warner today. I thought we'd be talking about Sandpaper Gate or blah, all that other stuff, which is all history. What's been really interesting to me is sort of leaning into David Warner's future with his family, which seems to me one of the most important parts of your life now.
Oh, most definitely. I've missed out a lot of it. And that's why, you know, I used to come home and come home for like 10 days or whatnot, and now you got the kids there, and you're probably yelling, going, get your stuff ready, you know, hurry up, what's taking so long, all this and that. You know, your emotions of just coming down from whatever you've won or lost and that, and then you've got to get back up again and go. You're home for a short burst, and then, you know, you've got to understand your kids. So I've missed a lot of opportunities to understand the kids, but I know each kid like properly, but it's more What makes them tick? You know, when are they tired? All these kind of stuff. Because I wasn't putting them to bed. I'd call them just before bed. And then I could hear in the background one's blowing up at the other one. And you know, there's fights left, right, and center when I'm away. So you know, I've even worked out the last couple of years when not to call. You know, they're things that you have to manage. And on the backside, on the flip side of that as well, it's about managing when you're away on tour with three kids. You know, that's where Candace is a ripper. Like we'd order it. You got accommodation paid for at a hotel, but we'd get an Airbnb. Why? Because Candace wants me to perform better. So, you know, in a relaxed environment that she knows the kids will be in, let's book an Airbnb. And they're little things that I wasn't even thinking of like that, you know, but she was always thinking of me as the sports person as well. So with the kids, I was like, okay, so we're in a home environment. Now I'm getting this opportunity to be in a home environment away with the kids. And, you know, they're the times that you love, you come home, you cook dinner, have a sense of home, because we don't have a home away from, you know, where we live. So that was another important thing with the kids and trying to understand that and how they are in different environments away from home. So there's a lot of different change. And I know in this group of cricketers now, they've all got young kids, or a fair few of them have got young kids. So they're going to have to go through that change now as well. And it's difficult. And, you know, I hope and I know that they do have great supporters at home as well by their side.
And final question for you, mate. Given that you've had such a legendary career in cricket, and you're blessed with a beautiful family, and your financial situation, you know, is probably in pretty good shape relative to what someone else coming from Matraville in those days would have, and probably far beyond what you ever expected or dreamed of. How does David Warner look to his obligations to pay forward to young cricketers or young kids, not your kids, but other kids, boys and girls coming out of maybe Matraville and other places, probably not Matraville these days, but, you know, equivalent. Do you feel a sense of obligation to these guys?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's a responsibility of me to make sure that people believe that anything is possible. Doesn't matter what you set out to achieve. Everything is possible. Hard work, bit of discipline, but just making sure that I'm connected as much as I can to the community, especially in my area. And then when I'm involved with Pathway Cricket and stuff, making sure that I'm giving back to the youngsters and making sure that not just working on their skills, but working on how to conduct themselves, try and conduct themselves better than what I did as a youngster. You're going to get a lot of advice, but it's how you choose to use that advice. So hopefully I can, be a voice for some of the young girls and boys coming through, and give them every opportunity to try and succeed at if they're passionate about cricket, help them with their cricket, and move forward and try and have a nice, without a few hurdles and obstacles, but have a nice sort of career if that's what they want to do.
And how did you enjoy yesterday the other day?
I enjoyed it. It was great fun. I had my father come up to me and just ask if anyone wanted to umpire, and I was just like, yeah, I might as well do it, thinking that he's not serious. But then I enjoyed it when I was out there. I actually really enjoyed it. I got a lot out of all the girls were encouraging. The best thing I found out there, because you don't say that when you're sitting off the field, they're all encouraging each other after every ball. Every shot, they're all encouraging
the girls each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like,
they're different to us.
Yeah, you know, it is. And back in the day, I just used to stand in the field, and if somebody wouldn't run for the ball, I'd run for it for them. So, like, it's so different, and it's great. I love, and you are right. They, girls and women are just completely different to us men.
This is great to learn, though.
Oh, it is. But how do we get that from a young age? It's very hard to teach.
Well, Dave Warner, it's been a great pleasure for me, and you've enhanced your legendary status as far as I'm concerned. Good to see you, mate.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, New friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.